Iran says, quote, the U.S. must cease to consider economic terrorism perpetrated by Trump or recent nuclear terrorism as negotiating leverage and remove all sanctions. The U.S. city of Minneapolis declares a state of emergency amid growing anger over another fatal shooting of an African-American man by a white officer. And health workers across Europe have recorded more than a million deaths from the novel coronavirus. It's good to have you along with us. Our top story, Iran has slammed the recent sabotage incident at its Natanz facility as nuclear terrorism and a war crime. In a letter addressed to UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres, Iran's Foreign Minister Mohammad Javad Zarif said the attack on a safeguarded facility risked releasing radioactive material into the environment. He added Israel, that threatened to prevent the revival of the 2015 Iran nuclear deal, is now boasting about its actions after the U.S. election. Iran's top diplomat also urged Washington to cease what he called economic terrorism against Iran as a negotiating leverage. He reiterated Iran's stance in the nuclear deal, saying the country would stop its remedial measures only after all sanctions are removed. Political commentator Mark Weber says the U.S. would risk its international reputation if it gives the green light to Israel for carrying out sabotage attacks similar to the one at Iran's Natanz facility.
But this is dangerous because the Biden administration wants very much for the United States to play as it believes its rightful place in the world as a world leader. And if it allows these incidents to detract from that, if it goes along with Israel in this, it becomes very difficult for the United States to be any kind of leader role in the world because it's not trusted by the world community. And most importantly, the attitude in Europe will continue to be one, or increasingly one, of distrust of the United States as any kind of reliable partner. The United States is obliged under the by the JCPOA agreement, which was ratified as a United Nations Security Council resolution, to abide by all of its provisions. It's not allowed to quibble or negotiate or try to renegotiate the agreement. And Europe knows this. The world knows this. And so the Biden administration attempt to sort of quibble the thing, it only shows the United States a lack of sincerity, a lack of real will to act in accord with international law. And if that's going to be the position of the new Biden administration, that it can't play an effective role as it would like to as a so-called world leader.
Iran's ambassador to the International Atomic Energy Agency says Israel and its allies are responsible for the act of sabotage at the country's Natanz nuclear facility. Kazem Gharibabadi said Israel's role in the attack is absolutely clear. He also called on the IAEA to condemn the act of terrorism and hold a session to discuss the incident. The Iranian envoy criticized the agency for failing to fulfill its responsibilities toward Iran. Gharibabadi said Iran is installing centrifuges at the Natanz facility, which are more advanced than the previous ones. Elsewhere, Iran's mission to the European Union called on the bloc to strongly condemn the incident as a threat to international peace and security.
Israel has made no secret of its hostility toward Iran since the Islamic Revolution of 1979, which led to the ouster of the U.S.-backed Pahlavi monarchy. Israel, which is also a fierce opponent of Iran's peaceful nuclear program, has been behind the assassination of Iranian nuclear scientists over the past years. On Sunday, Iran's Natanz nuclear facility in the central province of Isfahan was hit by a power outage. Israeli media confirmed that the Mossad spy agency carried out a cyber attack on the site. Iran also blamed the Israeli regime for the incident.
What happened in Natanz was a bold act of nuclear terrorism on Iranian soil. It can be considered under the category of crimes against humanity, which the Israeli regime has been doing that for many years now.
Said Khatibzadeh stressed that the incident will not slow down the country's nuclear program, rather it will speed up its advancement. He said the IR-1 centrifuges damaged in the blackout will be replaced with more advanced ones. Foreign Minister Mohammad Javad Zarif also accused Israel of sabotaging the Natanz facility and pledged revenge against Tel Aviv for the attack. Zarif suggested that the attack was an attempt to derail the talks held in the Austrian capital with the aim of reviving the 2015 Iran nuclear deal known as the JCPOA. The European Union also said the incident in Natanz could have been an act of sabotage and warned against any attempts to derail the JCPOA talks, which will resume on Wednesday in Vienna between Tehran and the remaining signatories to the deal.
And the bottom line for us is that we are saying that we are rejecting any attempts to undermine or to derail the ongoing diplomatic activities to try to resolve all the open questions regarding Iranian nuclear deal. We try to resolve them through diplomatic means currently in Vienna in the ongoing process of talks and negotiations of the parties of the JCPOA and through our contacts with the United States.
Russia also expressed hope that the attack on the Iranian nuclear facility will not undermine the Vienna negotiations. The Sunday attack came as U.S. Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin was in Israel for talks with Benjamin Netanyahu, who vowed to do everything in his power to stop efforts for salvaging the JCPOA. U.S. media say Washington, which is Israel's closest ally, was not involved in the attack on the Natanz facility, but the timing of Austin's trip has raised doubts about the claim. Leader of Iran's Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, has stressed that Tehran cannot trust promises made by the new U.S. administration regarding the revival of the JCPOA. Now the attack on the Natanz nuclear facility can deepen the distrust as the incident further questions the sincerity of such promises.
Political commentator Michael Jones says Israel's act of sabotage against the Iranian nuclear facility shows that it is the main sponsor of terrorism. Here's more.
Once again, confirmed our belief that the main source of state-sponsored terrorism is Israel. So the question is, the whole world condemns this act. What are they going to do about it? The first challenge is going to be to the United States. This is a test of the Biden administration. Is Biden in charge here, or all those dual citizens in his cabinet? Are they running the show, like the Secretary of State, all the people who have dual citizenship with Israel? This is a direct challenge to Mr. Biden. It's a direct challenge to the United States of America. It's an attack on Iran, but that's where the real challenge lies.
South Korean Prime Minister Chung Sik-yoon is in Iran in a historic visit to mend strained ties with Iran. The two sides have discussed a host of political and economic issues, including the Iranian frozen assets in Seoul. Yusuf Jalali reports.
This is the first time in over four decades that a South Korean Prime Minister visits Iran. Chung Sik-yoon arrived in Tehran on Sunday for a three-day visit that aims to boost bilateral ties. During his trip, Chung held talks with high-ranking Iranian officials, including Parliament Speaker Mohammad Bagher Ghalibaf and Ali Larijani, who was an advisor to leader of the Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei. Chung's historic visit is viewed as an icebreaker to forge stronger ties between Seoul and Tehran after years of strained relations. Now to start with, Tehran says Seoul should unlock billions of dollars of Iranian assets frozen in its banks. The figure is roughly $8.5 billion of Iranian revenues made from oil sales to Seoul. The funds are now blocked in two South Korean banks for fears of running afoul of U.S. sanctions against the Islamic Republic. Tehran says South Korea's inaction toward the issue has been the main barrier in the way of further development of bilateral relations.
Unfortunately, relations between Tehran and Seoul have not seen any development in the past 3 years due to South Korea's adherence to U.S. anti-Iran sanctions that lack any international legitimacy.
The South Korean premier said his country is determined to solve the issue and will make its utmost efforts to prepare the ground for Iran's access to its assets.
South Korea will increase its cooperation with the related countries to unfreeze the Iranian financial resources. This is to get both sides out of the current deadlock in bilateral relations.
Before the U.S. intensified its sanctions on Iran, South Korea was one of the country's largest trade partners outside West Asia and its fourth largest oil customer. Following the 2015 nuclear deal, bilateral trade reached $12 billion in 2017. yet these exports tumbled down after the U.S. reinstated anti-Iran sanctions in 2018, dropping to minus $90 million in the first half of 2020.
South Korea used to be one of the major clients of Iran oil, and Iran was also a permanent market for South Korea technology, from car to home appliances. But this active trade partnership was abruptly halted by United States sanctions. And I think the two sides have made up their mind to resume their friendly ties despite the United States' will.
Chung's visit follows the Islamic Republic's release of a South Korean oil tanker about 3 months after its seizure over alleged oil pollution. The move is interpreted by observers as an act of rapprochement that, if Seoul compensates by releasing the Iranian assets, can open a new chapter in the two countries' political and trade ties. Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
At least one person has been killed and an officer injured in a shooting at Knoxville High School in the U.S. state of Tennessee. The Knoxville Police Department says investigation is underway, but police have reported, quote, multiple victims. Authorities did not say if the gunman had been taken into custody, but a local news outlet reported that one person had been detained. A string of mass shootings has unfolded across the United States since mid-March. A week ago, a man opened fire at the cabinet-making plant in Texas where he worked, killing one person and wounding six others before he was taken into custody. More on that, the U.S. city of Minneapolis has declared a state of emergency amid growing anger over another fatal shooting of an African-American by a white officer. The Minneapolis mayor also declared an 11-hour curfew starting from 7 p.m. The city has been the scene of clashes between Black Lives Matter demonstrators and police. President Joe Biden has urged people to remain peaceful in their protests. Anger is boiling after a video emerged showing Dante Wright being fatally shot by an officer while being arrested for a traffic violation in Brooklyn Center, Minnesota on Sunday. The police say the gunshot, was fired by accident.
As I watched the video and listened to the officer's commands, it is my belief that the officer had the intention to deploy their taser, but instead shot Mr. Wright with a single bullet. This appears to me, from what I viewed and the officer's reaction and distress immediately after, that this was an accidental discharge that resulted in the tragic death of Mr. Wright. I'm also stressing that I do hope for the community to be patient.
The police chief added that the officer is placed on administrative leave while investigations into the incident are underway. Several instances of police brutality against African Americans have sent shockwaves across the U.S., sparking protests calling for police reforms. Health officials across Europe have recorded more than a million deaths since the outbreak of the novel coronavirus as the disease continues to wreak havoc on the continent. The death toll in Europe is the highest of any global region, with several countries reporting a surge in infections and deaths. Britain reported the highest number of new cases since April, with more than 3,500 infections. The latest figures push the country's total cases to over 4.3 million and more than 127,000 deaths. In France, the number of patients in intensive care units has risen to a new 2021 record of nearly 6,000. Meanwhile, the World Health Organization has expressed concern over the surge in cases and deaths.
This pandemic is a long way from over, but we have many reasons for optimism. The decline in cases and deaths during the first 2 months of the year shows that this virus and its variants can be stopped. We have now seen 7 consecutive weeks of increasing cases and 4 weeks of increasing deaths. Last week was the 4th highest number of cases in a single week so far.
The WHO also warned that the trajectory of the pandemic is growing exponentially. The organization's technical lead on COVID-19 says the transmission has increased for 7 consecutive weeks now. Meanwhile, the U.S. remains to be the world's worsted country by the pandemic. Officials in the U.S. have so far reported over 562,000 deaths out of more than 31, that is 0.2 million confirmed cases. In Brazil, the world's second worst hit in terms of deaths, authorities reported over 35,000 new cases and nearly 1,500 more deaths. The South American nation's caseload now stands at more than 13.5 million and deaths over 354,000. A senior former British civil servant says the UK's 300-year-old union is in deep crisis, citing a lack of strategy by the government. Philip Rycroft says Britain's future is also in doubt due to what he called deep-rooted complacency from Westminster. Ahmed Caballo has more in this report from London.
Increasing the number of
Boris Johnson is the Prime Minister of the United Kingdom. That is a fact. But according to a senior former British civil servant, Philip Rycroft, the COVID-19 pandemic has seeded the idea of a Prime Minister who speaks for England alone. In a study looking at the issues of devolution from inside the UK state machinery, the former permanent secretary to the Brexit department stated that the 300-year-old union is in deep peril due to no defined strategy by Westminster.
In the context of COVID, where each of the constituent nations' devolved governments are essentially self-governing, this has inculcated a sense that Britain is not a unified nation, UK is not unified, and it's never been more divided and never been more angry. And to all intents, I think it's fair to say that Boris Johnson, at least unofficially, is the Prime Minister of England only. He doesn't seem to care about the union.
The crisis has been exacerbated amid growing momentum for a second referendum on Scottish independence, with a recent poll showing that pro-independence parties would win 79 of 129 seats in Holyrood in the upcoming elections. Moreover, there's also a growing independence movement in Wales that will add to Westminster's woes. Meanwhile, in Northern Ireland, there's been a serious deterioration of relations between the nationalist and loyalist communities following the implementation of the Brexit deal, which has resulted in some of the worst street violence to have taken place in recent years.
I think Northern Ireland has been used as a pawn. It's been used as a pawn by the British government. It's been used as a pawn by the European Union.
The report, co-authored by Professor Michael Kenny, claimed it was political decision-making made by Westminster mixed with a lack of consultation with dissolved governments and confused messaging that has caused widening divisions, with Rycroft claiming that Boris Johnson's muscular brand of unionism had asserted the value of the union rather than demonstrating it.
Boris Johnson and his crew of hard-right ideologues have substituted flag-waving British nationalism for clear-headed policy designed to make people in different parts of the UK feel they're part of something united rather than increasingly polarised. And when the flag waving starts, the thinking stops. And when the thinking stops, the road to ruin is set. And this UK is on a road to ruin.
The warnings laid out in this new report are stark. Unless there's a change in strategy from Downing Street, then the future of the United Kingdom as four nations, England, Scotland, Wales and Northern Ireland, is in doubt. Ahmed Caballo, London.
Well, that's your world news.
This is IRIB English Radio. Iranian news. Iranian culture. Iranian voice. www.parstoday.com/en.
Evidence that a variant of the coronavirus identified in South Africa might compromise immunity, sparks concerns about vaccine effectiveness, says Evan Calloway, researcher, in an article published under the heading, Fast-spreading COVID variant can elude immune responses. Stay tuned for the details, please. Evidence is growing that some coronavirus variants could evade immune responses triggered by vaccines and previous infections. Researchers are trying to make sense of a tsunami of lab studies released recently that raise concerns about some emerging variants and mutations. Some of the data I've seen in the last 48 hours have really scared me, says Daniel Altman, an immunologist at Imperial College London, who worries that some of the results could portend a reduction in the effectiveness of COVID-19 vaccines. But the picture is murky, Altman and other scientists emphasize. The studies, which examined the blood of a small numbers of people who had recovered from COVID-19 or received a vaccine, probed only their antibodies' capacity to neutralize variants in lab tests, and not the wider effects of other components of their immune response. Neither do the studies indicate whether the changes in antibody activity make any difference to the real-world effectiveness of vaccines or the likelihood of reinfection. Are these changes going to be important? I really don't know, says Paul Bisnes, a virologist at Rockefeller University in New York City, who co-led one of the studies. Much of the concern centers around the variant that researchers identified in South Africa in late 2020. A team led by Tulio do Oliveira, a bioinformatician at the University of KwaZulu-Natal in Durban, South Africa, linked the variant called 501Y.V2 to a fast-growing epidemic in Eastern Cape Province that has since spread across South Africa and into other countries. The lineage carries many mutations in the SARS-CoV-2 spike protein, the immune system's prime target, which allows the virus to identify and infect host cells, including some changes linked to weakened antibody activity against the virus. The Eastern Cape was hit hard by South Africa's first COVID-19 wave, and researchers wondered whether the rapid spread of 501Y.V2 could be partly explained by its ability to elude previously established immune responses. To investigate this, Do Oliveira, virologist Alex Sigal at the Africa Health Research Institute in Durban, and other colleagues isolated 501Y.V2 viruses from people infected with the variant. They then tested the variant samples against serum, the antibody-containing portion of blood taken from six people who had recovered from COVID-19 caused by other versions of the virus. This convalescent serum tends to contain neutralizing or virus-blocking antibodies that can prevent infection. The researchers found that the convalescent serum was much worse at neutralizing 501Y.V2 than at neutralizing variants that circulated earlier in the pandemic. Some people's plasma performed better against 501Y.V2 than did others, but in all cases, the neutralizing power was substantially weakened. It's extremely worrying. In a separate study, a team led by virologist Penny Moore at the National Institute for Communicable Diseases and the University of Witwatersrand in Johannesburg, South Africa, probed the effects of convalescent serum on various combinations of spike mutations found in 501Y.V2. They did this using a pseudovirus, a modified form of HIV that infects cells using the SARS-CoV-2 spike protein. These experiments showed that 501Y.V2 contains mutations that blunt the effects of neutralizing antibodies that recognize two key regions of a spike, its receptor binding and N-terminal domains. Pseudoviruses with the full package of 501Y.V2 mutations were fully resistant to convalescent serum from 21 out of 44 participants and were partly resistant to the vast majority of people's sera, Moore's team found. There is now proof of several reinfections with 501Y.V2 in South Africa, says Do Oliveira. It seems increasingly likely that the variant's ability to spread in places hit hard by earlier waves of COVID-19 is being driven, in part, by its capacity to evade immune responses that developed in response to earlier versions of the virus. It becomes virtually inescapable that that's what's happening, says Benzes, noting that variants identified in Brazil and the United Kingdom carry some of the same spike mutations. Both South African teams will soon test the 501Y.V2 variant with serum from people who participated in COVID-19 vaccine trials. And similar studies are underway at labs worldwide. A team co-led by Benzes found that mutations in the receptor binding domain of 501Y.V2 caused a modest drop in the potency of antibodies from people who had received either vaccines of Pfizer or Moderna. That's a reassuring finding, says Moore, but it will be important to test the consequences of other mutations in 501Y.V2. Whether these could lessen the effectiveness of vaccines is still uncertain, says Volker Thiel, an RNA virologist at the University of Bern in Switzerland. Most COVID-19 vaccines elicit high levels of antibodies that target diverse regions of the spike protein. So, some of the molecules are likely to be able to block variants of the virus. And other components of the immune response, such as T cells, might not be affected by 501Y.V2. Although the vaccines target only the spike gene, they should still mount an immune response that is diverse enough that these new variants should be covered, Thiel says. What experimental studies need to be done? Data from ongoing efficacy trials and national vaccine rollouts should be able to uncover the effects of the variants. Several vaccines are still being trialed in South Africa, and researchers will be watching for any drop in their ability to prevent COVID-19 that's linked to the rise of 501Y.V2. A dampened antibody response to variants such as 501Y.V2 might not be much of a problem in practice, says Marian Koopmans, a virologist at the Erasmus Medical Center in Rotterdam, the Netherlands. You can see some change in a lab assay, which does not have an effect in a person because that person still has enough antibodies to neutralize the infection. It can also be difficult to disentangle whether reinfections are due to waning immune responses triggered by the first infection or to the effects of a mutation, she adds. clues are also beginning to emerge about the behavior of a fast-spreading variant identified in the United Kingdom known as B117. In pseudovirus experiments, researchers at biotech firm BioNTech in Mainz, Germany found that B117's spike mutations had little effect on sera from 16 people who had received the vaccine. Meanwhile, a team led by virologist Ravindra Gupta at the University of Cambridge, UK, looked at the sera of 15 people who had received the first of two doses of the same immunization. The team found that 10 people's sera was less effective against B117 than against other versions of SARS-CoV-2. These changes shouldn't make a difference to the vaccine's effectiveness now, says Gupta, but they could as antibody levels wane over time. What this week's results mean for battling the pandemic are not yet clear. It is a top priority for researchers to determine whether mutations in 501Y.V2 are responsible for reinfections. If they are, says Do Oliveira, the whole idea of herd immunity would become a pipe dream, at least from natural infection.
Food for thought.
The Lady of Light, the Holy Prophet's Immaculate Daughter, Hazrat Fatima Zahra, peace be upon her, has been quoted in explaining the philosophy behind some of the basic tenets of Islam in the following passage. Never become angry with others and do not ask anything from them. Wish for the people whatever you wish for yourself.
Is there any other way to get familiar with Islam besides mainstream media? Try IRIB English Radio.
Thank you.
log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you are and wherever you are listening to us.
The keys of life.
I feel Jalaldi talks about the various keys of life and has brought about this book to be a companion for the very famous Mafatil Jiran, where one is a tool or the keys for paradise, and this book, of course, are the keys of life.
The Keys of Life, a program designed to tell you that what Islam gives you will help get you home with joy and faithfulness. So, well, listen to
The Keys of Life.
The world is a very, very big house, many people living in many rooms. We must open all the doors up, we must unlock them all today. Throw all
the keys away. من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين والصلاة والسلام على سيدنا محمد وآله الطاهرين. My name is Sheikh Zaid Al Salami. A few years ago, I started the course of wanting to commentate on a very important book that I believe is something that would be useful for everyone who reads it. And that is the book Mafatih al-Hayat, written by Ayatollah al-Uzma al-Sheikh Jawadi Amuli. In this episode, we're going to be talking about something that we've spoken about before, and that is the topic of sleeping. But in this chapter, chapter 11, Ayatollah Jawadi Amuli dedicates this whole chapter about having a healthy Islamic sleeping pattern and also utilizing and benefiting from the day that you have. Imam Al-Kadhim, salamullahi alayhi, he says, La'ana Rasulullah, sallallahu alayhi wa alihi, thalatha, that Rasulullah cursed three types of people. And this is to do with sleeping alone, sleeping by yourself. You should not sleep alone. You should try to avoid sleeping alone in normal circumstances. Make sure that there is someone with you, at least in the same house. Doesn't necessarily need to be in the same room, but at least in the same house. One of the cursed is al-na'ima fi baytin wahdahu, someone who is sleeping in a house all alone, of course intentionally wanting to be as such. As for when to sleep, there are places or times when it is good for a person to sleep. For example, it's recommended to have that qaylula sleep, which is just before noontime, just a little power nap, if we could say. Maghrib time is very, very bad for a person to sleep. Between Maghrib and Isha is a very bad time for a person to sleep. Imam Ali alayhi salam, he says, Al-nawmu bayna al-isha'ayn yurithu al-faqr. Sleeping between Maghrib and Isha brings about poverty. Sleeping after Fajr and before sunrise is also a bad time. It's very recommended, very mustahab to stay awake during this particular time. Well, nawm qabla tulu' ash-shams yurith al-faqr. If you were to sleep before sunrise, that also brings about
poverty, remembering that too much sleeping is always bad. Make sure that you have that custom in your life that you always are an early bird. You always wake up early in the morning. Imam As-Sadiq alayhi salam, he says, كَثْرَةُ النَّوْمِ مَذْهَبَةٌ لِلدِّينِ وَالدُّنْيَا. Too much sleeping will ruin your deen and also your dunya. A person who's always waking up late, how are they going to gain sustenance? How are they going to generate an income? How are they going to prove that they are effective and successful and have ambitions and have seek opportunities in their life? And that's why it's always very, very important. I'd like to share this hadith from Imam al-Baqir alayhi salam. Very interesting hadith. أَرْبَعَةٌ الْقَلِيلْ مِنْهَا كَثِيرٌ. That even its minimum is way too much. النَّارُ الْقَلِيلْ مِنْهَا كَثِيرٌ. That small amount of fire is still too much. وَالْنَوْمَ الْقَلِيلْ مِنْهُ كَثِيرٌ. A small amount of sleeping is still too much. وَالْمَرَضُ الْقَلِيلْ مِنْهُ كَثِيرٌ. And a small amount of sickness is still too much. وَالْعَدَاوَةُ الْقَلِيلُ مِنْهَا كَثِيرٌ. And having an enemy, as minimum as the number might be of enemies, it is still too much. So we need to remember that, you know, the least amount is always going to be the best, because it is going to allow us to benefit from something even more. We should utilize the time and benefit from the opportunities that are ahead of us, because indeed we're going to be responsible and accountable in the eyes of Almighty God.
Ayatollah Javadi Amali, the author of the book Mafatihul Hayat, The Keys of Life. This book, Mafatih, ought to be in two volumes. One volume, the present volume, Mafatihul Janan, is on the level of the lofty rewards for praying, fasting, etc. But the book lacks its second volume, which ought to be on subjects like the lofty rewards for planting a tree. Imam has mentioned both of these subjects. The very Imam, who has stressed out the reward for praying, has also highlighted the reward for planting a tree. There are generous amounts of reward for protecting the environment. When growing wheat, take some in your hand and say these prayers. These are what the very Imam has mentioned. We lack this second volume in Islamic world.
The hadith says from Imam Ali alayhi salam, Al-fursatu, opportunities. Al-fursatu tamurru marra sihab. Opportunities pass as fast as clouds do. Fantahizu furas al-khayr. So seize good opportunities. Another hadith from Imam Ali alayhi salam that says, Ida'atul fursa ghussa. For you to lose an opportunity is grief. It's going to be grievous, and it's going to be a source of sorrow as well. So we need to always remember that there are many things that we are able to do in benefiting from the whole day that we have. And remembering that everything comes from Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. Always remembering that we should avoid having that level of pride or ego, or even being too over confident. Iyyaka wal i'jabu bi nafsik wal thiqatu bima yu'jibuka minha. Imam Ali alayhi salam says, be careful Don't think too much of yourself. You know, don't have too much confidence. Don't be too proud. Imam Sadiq alayhi salam, he says, "Dhikrullahi ala kulli hal," remembering Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala in every opportunity that you have, does not mean that you just say laysa, does not mean that you just say subhanallahi walhamdulillahi wa la ilaha illallah wallahu akbar. That's not what dhikrullah in any situation means. Walakin idha warada alayka shay, however, what does dhikrullah mean, remembering God? You know, we're talking about when you're awake, when you're not sleeping, remember Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, benefit from the time that you have. He says, إِذَا وَرَدَ عَلَيْكَ شَيْءٌ أَمَرَ اللَّهُ عَزَّ وَجَلَّ بِهِ أَخَذْتَ بِهِ. Remembering God means that if something passes you, or if something is ahead of you, or if you are faced with something that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has commanded you to do, you act upon it. وَإِذَا وَرَدَ عَلَيْكَ شَيْءٍ نَهَى اللَّهُ عَزَّ وَجَلَّ عَنْهُ تَرَكْتَهُ. And if there is something that you face that God has prohibited you from acting upon and doing, you abandon it and you don't do it. That's what ذكرullah عز وجل means. والحمد لله رب العالمين والصلاة والسلام على أشرف خلق الله محمد وآله الطاهرين.
Driving past, walking fast to the field of dreams, hear the children's screams.
There was the Keys of Life by Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran, IRIB English Radio.
Every corner represents a different image in my mind, a momentary emotion, space spent in time. Memories fade like a dusty window pane, and you can't see your past no more. The only thing that remains is that feeling of warmth in your heart that will always be there, be there.
Hello everyone and welcome back. A section of highway winding through mountains and over the waters in central China provides people with picturesque views as it connects multiple tourist attractions in the region. Guizhou Highway is located in Yichang City in Hubei Province. The highway has a total length of more than 10 kilometers, almost 4.5 kilometers of a highway stretches over valleys and streams. The highway also offers convenience for self-driving tourists. In order to avoid deforestation and protect the ecological environment, building bridges was adopted to replace a traditional approach of digging tunnels and constructing roads in mountains.
A group of researchers have discovered a new mammal from the dinosaur era during their excavations in Chile. The creature, called the Oretherium zen, meaning beast of five teeth, inhabited southern Chile's Miocenes region during the Mesozoic era of the dinosaurs. This is a very important discovery as it fills a gap in information on the evolution of a mysterious group of mammals that became extinct and have no descendants today.
The interesting thing with this finding, and this is based on a fairly well-preserved portion of the jaw with five teeth, is that this animal probably was an omnivore. So it fed on plants, probably insects and other types of food, a varied diet. It coexisted in the same place with other forms of life, including mainly dinosaurs. on rocks with a data that indicates that it was between 72 million, 74 million years old. And this is located in the far south of Chile, in the Magallanes region, in the town of Valle del Rio de las Chinas.
The find may help scientists answer many questions they had for a long time about dinosaurs, mammals, and other groups. This discovery is more significant than other findings because a well-preserved jaw belonging to the dinosaur was found during the excavations.
To Egypt, where archaeologists have discovered an ancient city dating back to more than 3,400 years ago. The city, which is the largest ever found in Egypt, dates back to the Golden Age of the Pharaohs. It's located in the city of Luxor, some 500 kilometers south of the capital, Cairo. The city had almost complete walls, as well as rooms filled with tools of daily life, along with rings, scarabs, colored pottery vessels, and mud bricks. Archaeologists say this is just the beginning of the discovery.
We believe that this golden lost city is the most important discovery after the discovery of the tomb of Tutankhamun. I call it golden because it was found in the Golden Age of Egypt, 1391 BC. I called it lost city because it was lost. No one really believed that the city could exist here. The dazzling Aton, three main districts, one area for storage. We found a big area for the storage of meat, making sandals, also sewing clothing, precious stones for making necklaces and bracelets, pottery. Tell us about the relation of Egypt with the New Kingdom. We think that this is the beginning of the discovery.
Habas says only one portion of the city has been discovered. The team will excavate the area of the temples in September. One other amazing thing about the discovery is that archaeologists found a large fish covered in gold that may have been venerated by the people living in the city. Archaeologists claim this is the second most important discovery since the tomb of Pharaoh Tutankhamun nearly a century ago. As a famous saying goes, everyone deserves a second chance. That's true about humans and animals. Mary is a baby alpaca from Germany. Her hind limbs were severely damaged in a traumatic birth, forcing vets to amputate one back leg. However, that was not the end of the way for this cute woolly mammal. A charitable farmer found Mary and adopted her. Now she has her own special wheeled harness that she works with. Mary's owner hopes to give her an artificial limb once she regains enough strength to carry weight on her remaining hind leg. That way, she can live as a regular happy alpaca.
The Light is a short bulletin in which we bring you a lot of interesting news in different fields, like animals' life, cultural events, funny trending news, and more from every corner of the world.
The more technology advances, the more robots are seen in more areas of daily life. Now, Chinese engineers have created robotic pets. A Chinese engineering workshop has made a robotic hound called Alpha Dog. It can navigate its way using sensors and artificial intelligence. Alpha Dog can also adapt to its environment using super-fast 5G internet. The robotic dog is incredibly stable and has more balance than a real canine. The developers hope their invention can be used to help disabled people, especially the visually impaired.
We are exploring ways of helping the disabled, especially the visual disabled, to live a better life. When the robot dog has the function of vision, hearing, and dialogue too, it can easily interact with disabled people and lead them to the supermarket or the bus.
The robotic bed costs $2,400. Despite the relatively high price tag, over 1,800 alpha dogs have been sold. The hunt has found favor with a large group of fans, especially children and technology geeks. The developers hope to equip future models with the ability to bark so their product would look more lifelike.
Cheese goes well with food items indeed, especially on the breakfast table in almost every home. But have you ever tested halloumi? The rubbery cheese I'm talking about from Cyprus, which now gets EU-protected status. Halloumi is a traditional homemade item in Cyprus, with historical accounts suggesting its production as early as the 16th century, believe it or not. Now, the salty cheese is the country's second most valuable export. In Turkish, it is known as helim. Europe has now decided to recognize halloumi, called white gold by dairy farmers, as a unique thing to be divided in eastern Mediterranean island there. Locals usually enjoy it tossed in the frying pan or barbecued, eaten raw with melon in the summer, or cubed and thrown into the boiled with soup.
Now an ancient town in central Italy is fighting for its life as it seeks to become a UNESCO World Heritage Site. Located in about 100 kilometers north of Rome, Civita di Bongelo has earned unsettling title of Dying Town, the Dying Town. The stunning landmark was built 3,000 years ago on a hill for military reasons, but landslides, earthquakes, and erosion have progressively reduced it to around a third of its original size. Now a UNESCO status may help it survive.
Our motto is resilience because Civita was founded by Etruscans, passed through the Roman era and the entire medieval period to reach the present day. This place is so fragile because the problem it faces is its geomorphological conformation. The cliff is made of clay and volcanic rock, and it is always subject to atmospheric agents, rain and winds, that have totally changed its appearance in recent years.
The fragile town is home to 14 people. Surprisingly, it was a big tourist attraction until it began charging an entry fee to visitors in 2013. Over a million people visited the site in 2019 before the coronavirus pandemic. Residents and officials hope the town will survive with the arrival of visitors who bring money for maintenance.
A baby capybara has found a new family at a zoo in the Colombian city of Cali after she was abandoned by her mother soon after birth last December. The little capybara is 3 months old and is under the care of a surrogate mother who is in charge of providing her with the skills she needs for optimal development. The baby capybara was rejected shortly after birth by her first-time parents. But the zoo hopes that in a couple of months she will be able to unite with another female of the same species.
As the COVID-19 pandemic has affected most sectors in one way or another, the Swiss tech firm has created a robot that can disinfect airplanes in a few minutes. The startup called Uvea says the robot emits powerful ultraviolet lights as it slowly moves down the